You have reached KPOO, San Francisco, 89.5 FM. This is Julie Matthews. I'm a certified nutrition consultant, and you've reached us today on Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth. Today we have on a great, great guest, and it's going to be highly informative. We're going to be talking about autism, hope, and recovery through natural protocols. And the guest is Michael Lang. He is the father of two children, 11 and 13, previously autistic and recovered using only nutritional and dietary biochemical interventions for natural detoxification. Both his daughter and son are essentially non-autistic, doing well in regular education with no need for aids, making and maintaining peer relationships, and for all practical purposes, leading healthy and normal lives. He is a former college professor who became a parent researcher and a nutritional consultant specializing in the biochemistry of autism, and boy, does he know a lot. After his first child's diagnosis in 1996, Michael's operating philosophy of cause, effect, and treatment in ASDs has long been, quote, His operating philosophy is, quote, that while mercury may be the rock thrown, sulfur chemistry is the window that is broken. And we are going to learn a lot about that today. Michael has committed the balance of his life to facilitating the recovery of other children with autism and establishing the causal connection between multigenerational vaccine and environmental toxin exposures, broad compromises in sulfur chemistry, and ASD. He is the formulator, founder, and president of Brainchild Nutritionals, a supplement company with the sole focus on supporting the specific biochemical needs and facilitating the natural detoxification of all children living within the spectrum. So let me see if I have Michael on the line with us. Are you there?
I am.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing up in San Francisco today?
Oh, it's freezing and lovely.
Yeah, it's a little chilly here in Santa Cruz, but I'm sitting on my deck looking out at the ocean. It's a beautiful day.
That's nice.
Spoiling myself.
So I met you, Michael, 6 years ago maybe.
Something like that, yeah.
And I was doing a paper for ADHD, and one of my teachers recommended that I interview you. Uh-huh. And so as you will all hear today on the show, once you listen to Michael for about 15 or 20 minutes, you will be so fascinated that you won't be able to put down the topic. So that's what happened to me, and that's a big reason of why I do what I do, because of all of your early wisdom and knowledge and help. So I want to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. Very kind of you.
And let's just talk about how you got here. You have an interesting story with your family, and I'm sure people would be very interested.
Back in 1996, when my first child was diagnosed, I really knew nothing about this. I was a photography professor. I had lived in the Bay Area, San Francisco and San Jose before, and had taught all throughout the Bay Area and over in the Central Valley. So I knew a lot about the chemistry of photography, but nothing about the chemistry of the body at that time. And I had gotten very sick with exposure to photochemistry and had used a lot of supplements, both nutritional and herbal supplements, to get over some conditions that I had relating to that. Hmm. So that happened prior to my children even being born. So I'd kind of already started going in that direction when my first child was diagnosed. And at that time, and I think, unfortunately, to some degree today, you go into a doctor, and no offense to any doctors listening, but you go into a pediatrician, and what you hear is, well, your child has it. We don't know what causes it. We don't really have a lot of solutions or prescriptions that will help it. We can't put them on certain drugs that will make them more, you know, manageable in classroom environments and maybe a little bit less likely to act out, but we can't cure it. We can't really, you know, help you to any great degree. And if none of that works, then you can always institutionalize your child. I mean, that was the options. Those are the options we were given. And I was, you know, I couldn't accept that. That's just, you know, I told the doctor, would you accept that if that was your child? And anyway, so I moved forward from that, I think, to just doing a lot of research in medical science libraries. I watched Lorenzo's Oil many times and basically fueled my drive with that. And then also did a lot of research online, which at that time the Internet was just starting to kind of bear fruit in the realm of medical and scientific research as well, being online posted. So what I started to make connections with pretty early on, And bear in mind, this is in 96. We knew nothing really about autism and vaccines and mercury and any of the things that are pretty much the hot causal theories today. We knew none of that then. We did know that there was something unusual about vaccines and autism, that a lot of parents reported their children regressing after their shots. But all that aside, I did essentially figure out that my children had impairments in detoxification, that even simple, fairly non-toxic chemistries that they were exposed to would cause horrible changes in their behavior, in their sleep schedules, in their digestion, and it would last for days, just one single exposure. So I started to work on using supplements and diets to help them better detoxify and to avoid getting toxins into them in the first place, because I realized that was not something that they could easily clear. So we, you know, set up a pretty, I don't even say green, but a pretty no toxin household for them. And then I used diets in the realm of the, I used an organic diet, got all pesticides and everything out of the foods that they ate. We went on the Feingold diet, which, if anyone's not familiar with that, it's a diet that removes primarily synthetic food colors, preservatives, sweeteners, and flavors from the diet, as well as some naturally occurring chemicals found in certain fruits and vegetables and things that have been sort of shown to provoke autistic or even ADD behavior. So we put my daughter on that, and then later on went to the gluten casein-free diet and modified sort of forms of the specific carbohydrate, just sort of reduced carbohydrate, not a lot of processed sugar. I don't give my kids dessert and things like that, so I'm not real popular around dinner time, but my kids are better for it. So those are the things we incorporated, but in the diet realm. But primarily what I sought to do was to increase their body's ability to detoxify broadly. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing that I found that helped this was sulfur, various forms of sulfur. You can find these as sulfates, sulfurs, sulfones, things like glucosamine and chondroitin sulfates, methyl sulfonyl methane, amino acids like cysteine and taurine, methionine, things like that I was trying. And I basically sort of struck upon a nice combination of sulfur supplements and antioxidants, as well as, you know, the broad multivitamin mineral combos that ultimately helped my children recover. At one point, I was using a supplement that contained that I later found had an artificial sweetener and color in it that my daughter reacted to, and the company that was making them refused to consider changing the formulations to a more natural sweetener flavor combo. So at that point, I started making my own. I started formulating what I would want to do if I could. I had gone back to study at the same nutritional school that you went to. Did a lot of research in nutritional biochemistry and what the cells need and what the cells look like, or how they malfunction, and what basically you can utilize to normalize cell function. So I put all that into about a year and a half worth of R&D in developing an initial product line, and then had a company down in San Diego initially contract manufacture them for me. So when we switched to those, there was a marked improvement. We were making these now as liquids and not as tablets or capsules or powders, and I found that when you put a liquid into the gut that was extremely well broken down, milled, as it were, in a liquid that it didn't require any digestion, got through the gut wall and into the bloodstream and ideally into the cell where it really needed to be. So to me, you have a child that won't take a pill or, you know, a capsule. So it's elemental that it has to be liquid. But beyond that, the absorption and benefit of liquid is nothing that can touch it. I mean, short of injecting a nutrient into a person, liquid administration of a really finely milled product is like the best way to get it into their bodies. So I started using that and ultimately started the company that I run now, Brainchild Nutritionals, and that'll be 10 years come February of 08.
Wow.
So
that's great.
It went from just me running everything, and initially just reselling it, and then Come 2002, I was manufacturing them in-house. So, but now we're a company of, including myself, now 12 people. We ship products all over the world. We sell to doctors, pharmacies, a lot mostly directly to parents, but we ship on it to every continent on the planet as the autism epidemic, you know, is not bounded by shore or continent. It's basically a global phenomenon. Wherever we find toxicity, wherever we find vaccination programs in place, we find the epidemic of autism basically following that.
Mm. Are there any countries that you know of that either surprise you or don't surprise you that it would be interesting to know about?
Well, some of the things I'm seeing in countries like Nigeria and China, I won't say the word surprise, but disturbed me when I started seeing what was happening there. I don't know if you've discussed this or had other people on the show to talk about this, but at one point the vaccine manufacturers took their remnant lots of dirty vaccine. By that I mean the ones that had the greatest content of mercury preservative, known as thimerosal mercuric chloride. They had agreed to start phasing these out at a certain period in negotiations with the Center for Disease Control and the Food and Drug Administration. And by the end of that agreed-upon date, they still had a lot of these vaccines left. So they, sort of as a, quote, goodwill gesture, they donated these vaccines to third-world distribution programs.
Oh.
And so with the help of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, who, I mean, their efforts are humanitarian, I suppose, in the great scope of their financial assistance. But what that did is put these really filthy vaccines into third world countries. And so 1 to 3 years behind that implementation, or I should say ahead of it, you start to see this epidemic rise in autism, where it wasn't that known before. You know, granted, we had mercury exposure via industrial pollutants and things. China is not known for a great environmental record, obviously, but the rates of autism were extremely low, almost comparable to what they were back in maybe the 70s, 60s and 70s here. And so suddenly in those countries you see this incredible spike. And as bad as it is here, we at least have some safety net. Whether it's the best we could develop or not is open to interpretation and a lot of disagreement. But in China, there's very little in the way of the medical establishment to deal with, to identify, diagnose, and treat this. The same is true in Nigeria. Other countries like Kuwait, they're experiencing some pretty dramatic increases. There was a lot of inoculations over there during the first and second Gulf Wars with experimental vaccines, and the rates are skyrocketing there as well. So it's very troubling to me to see these things, you know, perpetuated beyond our shores. Even though we're starting to wake up to this reality now slowly, it's still just basically in its infancy in these other countries. And I think we have another decade or two of this continuing. I think even if we stopped it now here, we would probably see a reverberation continuing in the third world for probably the next decade or more.
Wow.
It's frightening. I mean, we're talking hundreds of thousands of human beings needlessly affected by this.
Mm.
It's a staggering, you know, realization.
That is so interesting. I had no idea what they did with the medications that they could no longer use. Never thought that they gave them to somebody else.
It's a good tax write-off.
Yeah. Ah, okay. Well, with that.
I wish I had better news on that front. But I'm not trying to broadcast gloom and doom. What I'm trying to do is acquaint people with the realities of our world and to try to change and to instill hope, not hopelessness.
Right. Well, can you talk a little bit so that we, you know, that you have a great sort of alternative natural detoxification protocol, but before we get there, maybe just give a little more background, because you've touched on several times this inability for those with autism to detoxify as well as others, but maybe you can give a little bit more of an overview so we can see why this detoxification piece is so important.
Okay. Yeah, what a lot of folks have not been acquainted with, especially in the realm of Western medicine, is that the body has its own natural detoxification system. And let's say that you go back, you know, maybe 4 or 5 million years or even beyond, where we were, you know, early hominids were walking on the earth. If they were exposed to, say, volcanic ash or something other, you know, type of environmental pollutant. In those days, it was not anything that was man-made. It was just natural. Mm-hmm. But they had to have some system of detoxification because mercury, arsenic, lead, cadmium, you know, all these other nasty chemicals were basically in the environment around them. Not in this, not to the degree that they are today, but in early times, they had to have some rudimentary system of clearing these toxins from their body, and we all have that. It's basically in all life forms to some greater or lesser degree. So what our bodies utilize to sort of power and maintain this detoxification system are vitamins, minerals, amino acids, and fatty acids that help either protect the body from the effects of the toxins or help the body to actually sort of make them less toxic, and then ultimately get them out of the body. So these are natural systems that we all should have functioning to a great degree. Unfortunately, the onslaught of chemicals in our environment has increased steadily to the point where we are literally swimming in toxins. If anyone doubts this, there was a couple of good studies on this, but one in particular that you can actually access was a Bill Moyers program done on toxins. And in that, he interviewed a gentleman named Philip Landergan. And Landergan was doing a program with children at that point where he drew blood samples, and he looked at their blood in reference to, I think in that test, about 200 particular toxins. Now note that this isn't just like all that there is. There's many, many more. There's hundreds of thousands of toxins out there on the planet right now, if not millions. I forget the exact number of ones that we've created. But for the 200 known toxins that they screened for, I believe that they found like a 70 to 74% positive averaged across all the children. They even drew Bill Moyers' blood and found that a similar profile of those chemicals looked for there.
Hmm.
And to make it even more horrifying, someone had actually taken someone had thought to check the amnio fluid when they did amniocentesis, looking for Down syndrome in like the second or third trimester. Someone thought, well, we're throwing that amniocentesis fluid away. We should examine that for some things. And so somebody screened it for toxins like Landergan was doing, and to their horror, they found a very similar profile in the amniotic fluid. So we are literally, as our first cells from a sperm and an egg cell, as soon as they meet and we start dividing and basically making a cell mass that ultimately becomes a zygote and embryo, we are swimming in toxins. I mean, not huge concentrations of them, but combinations of them we don't really understand the chemical interactions of yet. So we're all affected by this. I'm not saying that it's unsolvable, but this is just the reality of where we are. So all of us have had, to some lesser or greater degree, a compromise in our ability to detox. It appears that children with autism, adults with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, motor neuron, Lou Gehrig's, and a number of other neurodegenerative conditions all have I won't say all have, but appear to greatly show a impaired ability to detox, a higher than normal range of held toxins, and a great deal of oxidative stress. So these things, if unchecked and undealt with, if you just medicate somebody with a pharmaceutical to sort of, allay the symptom but not treat the deeper cause, these problems will continue to accelerate within the body and cause great harm. Free radicals, unchecked oxidative stress, can lead to heart disease and cancer and other things. So these are no small problems, but they do have some relatively simple remediation pathways that a lot of people are unaware of, and it's taking certain vitamins and minerals, herbs as well, some that are helpful in enhancing liver function or detoxifying certain chemicals can be really useful. But basically a starter toolkit that I would suggest people looking into is a good multivitamin, a good multimineral, fatty acids that you can either get from fish oils or flax. And when I say fish oils, I would want to specify cod liver oil, and particularly products that are molecularly distilled and of higher quality and purity. There are some pretty bad ones out there, so buyer beware on that. Flax oils, hemp oil is a really good oil. A lot of people have been scared away from, obviously, because of the connotations of, being a close relative of marijuana or having some psychoactive properties, which it does not. But hemp oil, flax, fish oil, also all very good. They're wonderful at helping to protect cell membranes. And resupply the needed lipids or fats for maintaining cell membranes. Vitamin A, also important in cell membrane function, but in inflammation, which we find to a great degree in autism. It's also great for regenerating the gastrointestinal tract, which anybody who has a child with autism or has treated them knows that they typically have a great deal of inflammation in the gastrointestinal tract. So vitamin A is great for that. Probiotics. Most people are familiar with Acidophilus, perhaps Bifidus, other types of healthy bacteria that we use to colonate or recolonate the gastrointestinal tract, you know, especially after you've taken a course of antibiotics. Autistic children tend to have fairly imbalanced or dysbiotic, as we could say, which means that the wrong flora, the wrong bacteria are in the wrong place and proliferating greatly and causing problems. So probiotics are usually a pretty good supplement to add into. Lastly, digestive enzymes that help to break down the food better, that also help to sort of initiate certain processes downstream from the enzyme introduction and digestion, all very important to add. So those are basically your beginning, you know, autism supplementation 101 toolkit. So for anybody who's looking to do something for their child on the spectrum, that's probably the best place to start. There are many, many other things, and one can get a kid on, you know, 50 or 60 supplements, but the idea, I think, is to keep it simple and to use things one at a time to see their benefit, mm-hmm. or if there's a reaction. Autistic children are very sensitive, can either be allergic or intolerant to certain nutrients. Or excipients or additives that you find in capsules or tablets sometime, or flavors or whatever it might be. So it's important to add things one at a time. Monitor the benefit over probably at least a 30-day period, I think, somewhat conservatively, and see what the benefit is. That way, if you gave them five things and you saw an improvement, how would you know which one it was?
Right.
Four of them might not be doing any good at all, and whatever's put in the body that's not helping is more of a burden because the body has to get rid of it, detoxify it, and they're already under enough of that kind of a load, already a burden. So we want to just use intelligently only what's needed. So those are just basically the basic starters.
Okay. I just want to let people know who are just tuning in. You are listening to KPOO San Francisco 89.5 FM. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant, and we are here with Michael Lang, and we are talking about autism, hope, and recovery through natural protocols. And so when we are back here, Michael, I wanted to find out, you have one of those protocols, which is an alternative detoxification protocol. And before I let you jump into it, I just wanted to comment. Sometimes I'm having a little static on the line, and sometimes the line seems clearer than others. So if you have if you have any way to influence that, then that would be great. Okay.
All right. I was on a portable. I'll get closer to the source here in just a second.
All right. Excellent.
So we've developed a detox protocol at Brainchild Nutritionals basically as a means of helping parents who wish to detoxify their children, particularly in the realm of heavy metal toxicity, to use something that's a little bit gentler than current means available right now. There are two primary agents for heavy metal detoxification that are in use right now. One is called DMSA, which is dimercaptorosuccinic acid, and the other is DMPS, and I'm going to forget the full name for that acronym. These are sort of quasi-pharmaceutical agents that have been used when someone has been, say, exposed in an industrial accident or something, exposed to heavy metals, and they've been fairly effective, I think, for that application. I do find that the way that you use these, the toxin involved, has a bearing on how the body actually reacts to these particular drugs. So that, think of it like a vehicle, like a bus, and that a bus on its own is not necessarily a problematic thing, but when I fill a bus up with angry people with guns, suddenly we have a very bad bus, so to speak. So when I put a lot of heavy metals in a bus, and it could be aluminum or it could be copper or cadmium or something like that, but if I load it full of mercury or lead and I try to get that bus out of the body and the body does not have the ability to clear it, then it has to go someplace. It can't just, you know, stay parked in the liver, per se. It has to actually get put back in the bloodstream, and the body tries other means of dealing with it. Typically what happens is that it gets sequestered in the lipids or fats of the body. The brain and liver and kidneys, being the most lipid-rich organs of the body, will wind up ultimately sort of reassimilating or reaccumulating this burden, which is a pretty bad scenario. If we look at an autistic child being affected, particularly neurologically, by mercury that's crossed into the brain from the blood-brain barrier, to put more in there is the last possible thing you would want to do. I do have some concerns that that has been happening to a lesser degree, but still a very important concern of mine, that some children that have gone on to traditional chelators have become more autistic afterwards. And the only way I can see that happening is if, again, we are depositing more heavy metals in the brain or somehow activating these metals to cause more damage.
Michael, do you have any idea about the percentage or, you know, any idea, the ones that don't respond well? Because when you listen to some of the parent, or you look at some of the parent surveys, chelation always rates as one of the very highest in terms of benefit to people.
Surely.
Is it that there's also a large number of people, or a larger number of people, that are harmed by it? Or is it just that those few people that do get harmed, it's very problematic for them?
Well, here's a couple things I've noted, is that, you know, these things have been very effective. DMSA and DMPS have been very effective for a lot of kids who have really heavy lead and mercury or other heavy metal burdens. Indisputable. I don't argue that they work. What I'm arguing is how that they work, and are they appropriate for all children? And should we basically have a better screening method to see which children are good candidates for this therapy and which ones are not? Right now, there's nothing in the world of autism yet that I've seen approaching this. So I don't have numbers for you. I have seen handfuls of them, but as I talk to parents that call me, a lot more people, when they're ordering vitamins, a lot more people are telling me that they went on DMSA, DMPS, and that they had really negative reactions and they stopped. One of the concerns that they had was sometimes as doctors would say, well, you know, there'll be a little bit of a negative reaction at first and just kind of ride it out. And these parents, you know, to their credit, weren't willing to do that. They saw some things that were frightening to them. You know, a child was more stimmy, that their hands were, you know, doing more, you know, self-stimming behavior. I don't know how to describe it beyond this, that sometimes autistic children will wave their fingers in front of their eyes, or they'll say or do something repetitively over and over again. They may see things like that, or the child may get more withdrawn, more lethargic. So these things are of great concern to parents who maybe saw those diminishing on other therapies, and now they're coming back. So to my mind, when you see something like that happening, the body is getting hit with more toxin in process than it can actually process.
Mm.
And so, again, I think there are children who have some pretty severe damage and who have regressed and not come back. And again, there's not a lot of them, but I can't give you a number as far as, you know, what's out there. But I've probably talked to more than maybe 60 or 70 people who've had reactions to this degree. Many of the children kind of bounce back after a handful of months, 4 to 6 months or so, but some of them have not. And a couple of years later, they're still kind of, you know, back in that same place of regression.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying don't use those things, but if you do see a reaction that's negative, then know that there are other options. And even if you are seeing good results, the one thing I have concerns about, even with situations where the DMSA and DMPS are working well, is that they primarily just chelate out heavy metals. What I know to be true with my own children and to many that I've worked with, that these children are holding a wide range of toxins, not just heavy metals.
Mm-hmm.
So to not clear those is not doing the full job. It's like sweeping the if someone breaks a bottle in your kitchen, it's like cleaning up the ketchup and leaving a glass. So I don't feel it's completely doing the whole job, and that other toxins are still going to cause problems in the kids. And these kids will be likely to accumulate other toxins down the road. So I think the more you can get out of them slowly and gently with a broader range of toxins going out, the better that they will be and the more effective the recovery will be as well.
Mm, absolutely.
There are a lot of side effects for the chelators I mentioned, and they leach minerals from the body. they leach cysteine, which is a precursor to glutathione, which is probably the body's best natural detoxifier of heavy metals on its own. So you're also taking certain vitamins out of the body. But metallominerals like magnesium and zinc, selenium, manganese, et cetera, molybdenum, are being leached out in great quantities, and you have to put them back in bucketfuls, only to have them leached back out. So to my mind, denaturing the body further, causing a greater deficiency of something we already know to be low in favor of, you know, giving the job to a pharmaceutical and taking away the body's own natural processes seems inherently wrong to me. So again, with some kids, there may be no other way to do it, and if that gets parents what they need and helps facilitate recovery, then great. But I do think parents should be aware of some of the problems with it and be able to make more informed decisions of something of this great import.
So I understand you have a several-step process on how to do a detoxification in a natural way using something other than the standard DMSA and DMPS. And
yes.
Where does it start?
Well, to begin with, I'm going to have to walk across the room, so pardon my static here as I do. One of the things that I first begin with is to normalize vitamin and mineral status in the body. What's crucial is that we get basically a good foundation of the vitamins and minerals, and the body cannot detoxify well without them. So it's crucial that be taken care of first. So that usually takes about a month or so. Depending upon the child, it could possibly take longer, but that's ultimately what we're looking at. From that point, I'd like to go forward into basically protecting the cells of the body. Before we detoxify, I really feel it's important to put in some supplement, and what I find usually is best for these is something in the realm of an ionic trace mineral supplement. Think of these as almost kind of like stealth minerals. They're very small ionic particle nutrients, and they're able to get into the cell to do some really fine work, particularly in the realm of nourishing and protecting the cells. So before we even start on anything really heavy as far as detoxification, it's important that the cells basically get their, you know, their protection and get readied for this. So the step two would be nourishing and protecting the cells. The third step that we incorporate in this is actually putting in a product that helps to recycle the body's primary heavy metal detoxifier we call glutathione, and effectively making that more readily recycled, so that when we put glutathione in the body later, we want to make sure that it can go maybe 15, 20 rounds against heavy metals and free radicals, instead of just using it once and having it kind of become laden. What we do know about children with autism is that they have very high levels of oxidized glutathione, which means that it's been basically laden or burdened with heavy metals or free radicals. And once it gets to that stage, it's not effective in doing anything beyond that. So when you have a high burden of oxidized glutathione, it actually becomes, again, a burden on the body. The body has to get rid of it. So if we could actually recycle that and put it to use, it becomes however many more times effective. If you want to say 15 or 20 or 30 times more effective, whatever number, you know, it's just a theoretical target. But making that more effectively recycled is a really crucial job. So again, prior to doing the detox, you want to make sure the body's natural systems are, you know, optimized. Mm. So after we do that recycling, an herb that provides recycling support, then we put in the actual glutathione. And that's an oral liposomal glutathione. It's actually made over in Palo Alto. It's a good product, and it's not cheap, but what it does, what no other oral form of this supplement can do, and that's basically get into the body and effectively do its detox work. So I don't want to talk too much about specific products. We have information people can get off our website if they want that.
Mm-hmm.
But after the glutathione, then we're looking at putting in a supplement that provides sulfur in a wide range of different nutrient forms in the body. My goal with this is initially to help defend the gastrointestinal environment, reduce inflammation there, and help give the gut what it needs. But note that the gut barrier which is very rich in sulfur, is very similar to the brain barrier, the blood-brain barrier. So the gut barrier, blood-brain barrier are interestingly similar. So if we know that the gut of autistic children, the guts are undersulfated. There's been several tests where they've taken biopsies, a little invasive, mind you, but they go in and either upper or lower endoscopy, and they take a small piece of the tissue there and analyze it. And typically, that part of the body is very rich in sulfur. It's probably the body's primary depository of sulfur. So we know that that's low. And they have not, I mean, obviously, it's a little easier to do a tissue biopsy in the gut than it is the brain. Not a lot of people are stepping forward to volunteer for that for some reason. So we know that in postmortems they've done of people with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's, they do find that the brain barrier is undersulfated. It has low antioxidant protection. So from what I can see of other neurodegenerative conditions, this is basically a global phenomenon of low sulfur in the barrier regions. So sort of a theoretical target of this next product is to help strengthen the blood-brain barrier with sulfur, so that when we do start to move toxins, and if for any reason that they're not effectively excreted from the body, that the likelihood of them going back across the blood-brain barrier and taking residence in the brain are reduced. Possibly, I don't have the data to prove this yet, but in lieu of that, I'm trying to do the best that we can to facilitate a general slow movement out and reduce any type of potential of what I spoke of just going back into the brain. And again, that's not been done with conventional chelators. I think this could, at the very least, be used in conjunction with them and help their efficiency and safety.
Mm-hmm.
Then on the step following that, we're looking at putting in something called liquid zeolite, which it's a liquid extract or liquid formula using a small molecular cage construct that comes from volcanic ash, which, when you first hear this, it sounds completely crazy. You think, wait a minute, didn't you say a while ago that volcanic ash has mercury and things like that? And yes, I did. And what's interesting is that when a volcano erupts and this ash is emitted, and as ash hits seawater, the combination of minerals from the volcano and the seawater forms this sort of a hexagonal, three-dimensional hexagonal structure. And it's like a cage. And within that cage, it has the ability to trap heavy metals. So as we find this stuff coming out of the volcanoes, yes, it's very laden with heavy metals. But what has been done to make this an effective chelator is they heat the zeolite in a solution up to, I think, over 450 degrees in a very acidic pH. And this is like what would happen in lava, mind you. And then some. But when you heat this cage up, it releases its heavy metals. Likewise, in the acidic solution, it's important for it. So unlikely you'd have someone with a temperature of 450 degrees and an acid in their stomach of like acid range of like 2 or 2.5. So they probably would be worrying about other health problems at that point. So anyway, we're not worried about the heavy metals that the body would ultimately put into this cage of being released, because it has a very strong binding affinity. So once the zeolite binds to a metal, it holds onto it and is readily excreted. So it's very subtle in its effect, and unlike the DMSA, DMPS, moves small amounts out on a pretty regular basis. I think it has a half-life of about maybe 3 or 4 hours in the body before it's excreted. So you supply it about 3 times a day.
And where does it get excreted?
It finds its way out in the urine. So we're just starting to gather some urine toxic metal tests, excretion studies on this. I'm in the process of collecting data, so anybody out there who's interested in this protocol, what we are offering people if they get into this protocol is a pre- and post-urine study. We're looking to gather the urine of children with autism prior to going on this whole protocol, and then after they've been on it for about, in total, for about 3 months, which gives us a little clearer picture about what they're excreting. What we are seeing thus far, and the few that we've gotten back already, because it takes about 3 or 4 months just to get through this whole protocol, is that there's a larger range of toxins moving out, but in low levels. And the children are tolerating this quite well. We're also getting reports back from some parents that they're seeing improvements in eye contact, verbalization, some social skills and things of that nature. You know, the varying reports, not saying that there's any clear picture of any, you know, group of improvements in any range of kids, but the parents are reporting some pretty interesting stuff, sometimes just on the zeolite alone. Anyway, that's like the next to last stage. The last stage we use in there is another heavy metal, or we could just say detoxifying support, called NDF Plus, and that stands for nanocolloidal detox factors. And it's a nanonized chlorella, or blue-green algae. And what this does is it has a ability to bind heavy metals and help them to be excreted from the body. Both of these agents, though, they don't just work on heavy metals. They also work on other chemicals. And, again, we know these children to be laden with more than just mercury and lead and everything else. So I'm trying to do a full-court press to get these things out. And, again, everything in small quantities over a more regular period, when you chelate with DMPS, DMSA, you have to do these pulsed on-off sessions where you're on for maybe a week or two, and then you're off for maybe, you know, a week or two, or it's 3 days on, 2 days off. There's this on-off process because the body cannot tolerate this process going on nonstop. It leaches too many minerals from the body. It leaches cysteine and glutathione from the body. It causes dysbiosis if taken orally. It causes other problems in the body. It also inhibits certain immune cells in the blood, in the bone marrow. It has problems associated with it, either of these. And so when you have to pulse them like that, you know, you're going to – I don't think you're getting the full benefit of it. It needs to be at a lower level, slower, over a longer period of time, I think, from what I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
So when we put these things in play, what we're seeing is a gradual detox. And in most cases, we're seeing a really nice sort of chain of improvements in the child. It isn't something that happens overnight. And, you know, there are some kids that it works really well with and some kids that it doesn't really help much. There are some kids who are non-responders, and this is the case with every therapy that's been applied in the world of autism. We're all striving to find out, you know, that little piece of the puzzle about what else can we do to help those kids, because we don't want to leave anybody behind. But to a great degree, we're seeing a really good profile of responders to these things, singularly and collectively.
Where do you see detoxification occurring in the process? So if there are some maybe new parents out there that haven't really gotten too far into this, where do people start and where does this detox process typically come?
Well, as far as, again, starting, I think the first and most important thing you can do is start with vitamins and minerals. I know I make them. It sounds like I'm pushing these for that purpose, but really, I mean, I'm doing this because I love this work, and I'm doing this because it helped my own children. But what I really want to stress more than anything else, and whether it's our products or somebody else's, it doesn't matter to a great degree, but as long as you get some product in them. But vitamins and minerals, if they're deficient, nothing else you're going to do after that is really going to work well. I mean, you can try to chelate them. You can put them on a pharmaceutical for, you know, mood or aggression or, you know, depression, whatever it is. None of those things will really help, to my experience, and I've been doing this now for 10 years, because until you alleviate foundational nutritional deficiencies, you're not really dealing with root causes. Some of these things are founded in that realm, and some are not. But until you get those things straightened out, you are needlessly treating things that could be, you know, alleviated very, very simply. For example, auditory sensitivity, a very common phenomenon in autism. You know, children holding their ears, screaming or crying when someone pops a balloon or runs a vacuum cleaner, breaks a piece of glass or a dish or something. Sometimes this will send an autistic child into a real panic anxiety state for many, you know, hours possibly, you know, and it's so they have a really acute auditory response to things. So I've seen all kinds of things done for this. There's auditory integration training that helps to desensitize them to loud noises, high-frequency noises in particular. I'm trying to think of what else we've seen. I've even seen kids wearing earmuffs. I've gone to their houses, and they were at parties, like birthday parties. They were wearing earmuffs. And so, I mean, there's many ways of dealing with this. But what is the basic cause of it? And one of the things I discovered really early on, probably about 1998, was that it was a study I found on the Internet where a Japanese a researcher team had taken a group of monkeys, and they'd selectively depleted one mineral nutrient at a time to see what would happen. So they gave them diets deficient in this particular mineral, each one of them, and they would also give them cofactors, like say calcium in high doses depletes magnesium. So they would hyper-supplement calcium and then back off the calcium once the magnesium was low and then see what happened. But what they found was that these monkeys in this cage became very, very sensitive to sound. Snap your fingers or clap your hands or, you know, hit a cymbals together. And these monkeys would be in pain. I mean, it wasn't just fear. That was there, too. But they were frightened to the point of experiencing, you know, pain. It was causing them great distress. So when I saw that, I started supplementing with some really better forms of magnesium in my own kids, and the auditory sensitivity went away. So, for example, what if I spent thousands of dollars on, you know, therapy, you know, behavioral therapy for that? I mean, what have I accomplished? If you had a kid who had dysbiosis and diarrhea, and you give him, you know, you give him an anti-diarrheal, I mean, what is that solving? If someone has a zinc deficiency and their wounds aren't healing, their immune system is compromised, and I give them some other drug for that, I mean, I haven't dealt with the foundation issue. So it's crucial, in my experience, to normalize vitamin and mineral status first and foremost, to see what remains after that, and then look at those issues one at a time and start using other nutritional, targeted nutritional interventions to deal with those. And you go as far as you can with using supplements. I have worked with a number of children. We've never had to use pharmaceuticals because most of their issues were in the metabolic range that we could, you know, reach with a therapeutic intervention of supplements.
That's great. And really, it makes a lot of sense, being that most of, I guess probably all problems in the body stem from some sort of a physical or biochemical response. And so if you can boost up whatever's missing, then you may be able to really affect a great deal.
Yes. Yeah, we get a lot rejection of this notion of vitamins can, you know, helping in this manner. I've had doctors and parents alike, you know, very skeptically saying, you know, wait a minute, how can vitamins do something like that? I don't think so. They're not drugs after all, you know. And I say, well, you know, just think of it this way, that vitamins are the building blocks of the structure and function of your body. The way that your brain works, whether it's the way you experience emotions, the way you experience joy or pain or all of your sensory information that you take in, And many other things. That's just a short list. All of those things are predicated by the food that you eat and the nutrition that your body utilizes to operate all those functions and so many more.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all nutrients do.
Right.
So other than that, they're not important. And I also like to say that when a child has, you know, a problem with ADD, they don't necessarily have a Ritalin deficiency, or if someone is depressed, they don't necessarily have a Prozac deficiency. These drugs are again working around the problem, suppressing symptom, or in somehow sort of in a back channel way addressing the root cause, a factor of the root cause, but not the root cause itself. So my energy is always trying, working towards getting at the root cause, and I usually find that instead of just hitting one problem, I can put one nutrient in sometimes, and it'll take care of four or five problems that a kid has.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's the first and foremost important thing we can do. We know autistic children don't digest food well. We know that they have malnutrition and nutritional deficiencies. It's fairly common. I won't say to a child. There are some kids that don't have gastrointestinal problems at all. There are others that have horrible problems that have never had a normal bowel movement since they were two, wearing diapers, you know, past the age of seven or eight, chronic diarrhea, constipation. These are not unusual stories.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have GI disturbances like that, you're not going to be getting a good yield of nutrients from your food.
No, not to mention that most of them probably don't have the most well-rounded diet anyway.
True.
And so you add that on top of it.
True. We get a lot of people calling and saying that their child only eats macaroni and cheese, milk and cereal, spaghetti and pasta with cheese on it, and
pizza
and maybe rice and maybe bread and butter. So we have kids that are eating mostly wheat and dairy, or kids that only eat carbs like sugars and things.
Mm-hmm.
So we tend to look, when we get a report like that, we look at what's going on there. Do they have a wheat and dairy issue that they're sort of willfully exacerbating? It's kind of a drug high, you know, almost from that.
Right.
Do they have a dysbiosis problem that they're fueling by eating more sugar? It's almost an addictive situation, a cycle there. So those are things we look at. Now, getting back to your question about detoxification, where does the detoxification begin in this process? Now, noting that nutrients will help to facilitate the body's normal detox mode, it begins the moment you start getting a good, healthy level of vitamins and minerals in there. It's, again, at a very slow rate. It's what the body would normally do if we were, again, inhaling volcanic ash and had, you know, a very small amount of heavy metals in our body. This would facilitate that. So we need more than that, obviously, down the line. But the detox begins, and this whole protocol I've set up, right from the very, you know, very start. But what we do is we keep sort of ramping it up slowly, gently, with another increased action of detox. And at each step, you're able to sort of calculate and judge on an individual basis, how does this particular child respond to step A, B, C, or D? And there might be some children that they have to stay on the vitamins for maybe 4 or 5 months because they're, one, so deficient, and two, so burdened with heavy metals or other toxins that you have to do this so slow as to not over-challenge the body.
Mm.
So at each step, we get a window into the child's wherewithal. And to me, it's very easily tailorable. There are some kids who may not tolerate one step in the middle, but tolerate everything down the line just fine. So it's got 7 steps, you know, with the flexibility to knock 1 or 2 of them out if need be, and or delay them if need be until the child recovers a little bit better. We have seen some kids. This is the most amazing thing to me. I never learned anything about this when I was in nutritional school, but we had kids who would go on our supplements for like the first 4 or 5 days, they'd be on one, maybe an eighth of a teaspoon or a quarter teaspoon. And they would be showing, I mean, and note that this is a supplement a 50-pound kid would take 2 teaspoons of 3 times a day. But we start up really slow. So sometimes they'd be taking an eighth of a teaspoon, and they would start what I would see as a classic detox reaction. And not a good one. I mean, a very sort of, you know, the body is reacting negatively. So, and I would typically ask these parents, do you have any type of detox test that you've done, either hair analysis or a challenge in the urine or stool that shows what kind of heavy metals your kid has? And I swear, almost to a child, all these kids had very high burdens of mercury, lead, or other heavy metals.
Mm.
So we put these kids on drops of vitamins or minerals.
Mm.
Like 1, 2, or 3 drops.
Wow.
And they maintained really well. We weren't monitoring their excretion of toxins at that point, but that's what they tolerated for like the first month. And then we went to 6 drops the second month. And by the 3rd month, they were up to maybe a half teaspoon or something like that. But in some cases, it has to go. So this is my rationale for this whole process, is that we have to think of these children as detoxification impaired first, and mercury toxic or mercury or other toxins, mind you, second.
Mm, yes.
So, because if we try to rush this, we're going to perhaps cause more problems and in some cases. And I think that, you know, in this whole pursuit of first doing no harm, we have to really reevaluate what the autistic child's metabolism is about, how they function when they are trying to get a toxin out of the body. And I think it's different to the way doctors have been trained. I didn't read about this anywhere. I basically, you know, observed it with my own children and many others I've worked with. And so it's something I wouldn't have expected or predicted either, but it's something that's staring me right in the face and I can't ignore.
Sure. Well, Michael, it has been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thank you.
And for people who want to learn more about what Michael Lang has been speaking of, his company is BrainChildNutritionals.com, and you can find out more there about all of his products and a lot more valuable information. I'm Julie Matthews, a certified nutrition consultant with Healthful Living. I work very regularly with children on the autistic spectrum from a nutritional perspective, and I have a book called Nourishing Hope, which you can find out more about at nourishinghope.com. And you have been listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. Stay tuned every Thursday at noon for Reality Sandwich. If you want to get this show or any past shows, they are available at realitysandwichradio.com. If you want to learn anything else about me or Healthful Living, you can go to healthfulliving.org. Thanks for listening.